Welcome to the Music Ed Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and this podcast, it exists for you. Whether you're a music lover, an educator, a choir member, each week we bring guests to the show to help explore what matters in music. I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome to the show. Hello, and welcome to the Music Ed Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, and this podcast is brought to you by our awesome friends over at the Kinnison Choral Company. Go to emilybirch.org/sponsors, click on the KCC logo, and it's going to take you to this awesome calculator. Why am I talking about a calculator? Because it is one of those rehearsal calculators that will help you say, I need this many minutes for this piece and that piece, and calculate some time. It's just fun to play with, and it's like playing with blocks of time. So go check it out, and thanks KCC for this awesome episode. This is my first official like teacher story interview. I had this idea when I was starting the podcast over a year ago now, that I wanted to have a place that we could tell stories of all of these amazing teachers out in the trenches, working and thriving. And so the first teacher I'm bringing on to tell their teacher story is a young teacher, Camille Lacey. She's in her first, you know, five-ish years of teaching, and she loves middle schoolers. So this conversation, whether you're becoming a teacher and you're in your college training, or you're already a teacher and you're maybe about the same experience level as Miss Lacey, or you are much more mature in your teaching years, this episode is just simply fun because Camille Lacey cannot contain her joy for teaching middle schoolers, and it's infectious. We talk about what it was like to take a job after someone had held that role for 30 plus years. We talk about a lot of rapid fire questions that some of my students have asked over the years that she could answer as an early years teacher. But really, we smiled a lot, and middle schoolers just bring life to the party. Whether or not you love middle schoolers, this episode is full of some really great nuggets that you can chew on. Why do you teach? Why do you create the culture you create? And how does music have the power to serve you, your students, the community at large? And how can you impact the whole school? This is a great conversation, and I'm so glad you're here. Today on the Music Ed Matters podcast, we are welcoming Camille Lacey. Hello, Camille.
Hello.
I'm so excited to talk to you. This is so much fun.
I am also excited to talk to you. I feel flattered to be on this. So
I feel flattered that you are giving me some of your time during spring break as a busy middle school choir director. That means a lot. So thank you for being here.
You're so welcome.
Who is Camille Lacey? How did you become a middle school chorus teacher?
Well, it's been kind of a journey. Honestly, I just remember in high school, I wanted to teach musical theater. And then I went down a course. Yeah. And then I went to a school that didn't offer a musical theater education degree. So I went down this vocal performance pathway, but then I came to USC, still vocal performance pathway. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I can be certified to be a teacher as a grad student. And so then I was like, oh, this is what I need to be doing, because honestly, life inside of a lonely practice room, I don't think is my style. I just really love people. And then whenever I did student teaching, I just remember like latching on to the middle schoolers. And I just remember my coaching teacher, she was like, I feel like this is your calling. People get called to middle school, and I think this is you. And I was like, yeah, I think so. And I previously taught at a school that was both elementary and middle school. And it was like my middle school chorus classes were the classes that I was looking forward to. And that made me feel sane. And then, you know, then the Gilbert middle school position just opened up, and I was like, this is the one. So
yeah. So you were called to middle school. I feel like you need to say that again, because it's a calling.
I was called to middle school.
And you didn't even say, no. You said, yeah, I think I am.
Like a lot of people are like, ooh, middle school. But honestly, I feel like sometimes I relate to them too much. I feel like that's good, because I'm like, I'm enjoying myself all day. And I'm sorry if you're not as a middle school teacher.
That said, like the perfect middle school teacher. I'm sorry if you're not. I'm still here. And I still love you. I love how awkward they are, and how I feel like it's our job, having gone, like, I was awful in middle school. I was so awkward. Were you?
I was awkward. I don't know, I feel like I went through different phases. I remember being in sixth grade and I was really quiet. And I don't remember really talking to, I don't remember talking to a lot of things. And then something in seventh grade clicked. And then I just turned really weird. And then I moved somewhere new and it was like a whole new group of people. And then I was just one of those weird middle schoolers that I feel like I'm reenacting all the time now as an adult. So,
yes. But you know, I feel like there's phases of adult life that are the middle school of adult. Like that right before you turn 30 is so totally the middle school of adulthood because you're not really in your 20s, but you're, I mean, you are, but you're not yet 30. And I feel
And I'm like 27. I'm right there.
Yes. Welcome to sixth grade of adulthood.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
rocking you. It. Oh, I love Thank this. Okay. You. So you taught elementary middle school, fell in love with the middle school part, got certified. Now you said Gilbert, for those people who don't know where that is,
it's
a great middle school, kind of in the countryside of South Carolina. I say that very lovingly. It is beautiful to drive out there.
It is.
It's not you a get bad to drive.
Drive by all these fields every day.
Yes.
Sometimes sometimes you're behind a tractor on the way to school.
No big deal. Oh my gosh. That's awesome. But I know that the person there, Camille Jones, was there for like how many years? 30 some years? She was a dynasty.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, she was there. I think it was like 30 years. And I think before she was at Gilbert Middle, she was at Gilbert High. So her entirety of her career, I think, was in Gilbert.
So when you heard the job was open, was that a scary thing to be like, I'm going to step in these big shoes?
Well, it was like, it was interesting. So whenever I was there to back up, I did student teaching at Gilbert Middle as well. I think, I don't know if I said that, but whenever I was there, it just felt so awesome. I was like, this is like the nicest place. And then we have a drama teacher that I share a wall with, and I'm just in love with her, Daphne DeBose. I just love her. And so it was just between everybody, it was just this fun environment. And so I always was like hoping that Camille would tell me and everything when the job was opened. And, you know, initially I think somebody else accepted the job before I even like knew it was available.
I know.
But then it was some kind of fate. I ran into her in ACDA and I was like, I want your job. And so I think just realizing that it was open and then somebody else was possibly going to take it made me realize I was like, I would really like that job.
What happened? Did they reach out to you when that person didn't take it?
Yeah. So Camille Jones was actually the one that reached out to me, which that's one thing that I really love about the school is that they kind of were like, Camille, we need your help to find somebody. But she reached out to me and she was like, saw you at ACDA. And then I realized you're the one that needs to take the job. And I was like, you're right. It is me. And so she kind of went through this whole convincing process, but honestly, it didn't really take that long to convince me because it just kind of felt right. Like I loved my last school. I really did. I spent a lot of time there even before I was like a certified teacher. I spent time there, but this one just felt right. And now that I've been there, I'm like, this one is so right. So
it's the job. So what's the feeling? Job. Is it the excitement every day? Is it your goals? What is it? The students? What's the feeling?
Like why I like it or why it feels like that. It's just the fact that whenever I leave, I don't feel drained. Mm. And, you know, it could be the year that we've had. We haven't had to worry about a lot of concerts or field trips or competitions. So that's a lot of the stress out of it anyways. But it's just the overall feeling that you walk into the school and you enjoy the people that are around you and everyone's kind of uplifting each other. And this, I get along with the students really well. And I really like that the administration just believe that you're doing what you're supposed to do and give you the space to do it. And that just changes a lot of the dynamic of the school. So I just really enjoy that. I can like it's walk down the hallway and not feel like in a bad mood.
Right. So you're not oppressed. You can feel that culture though. When you walk in the front door as someone who had to check in and get the little visitor tag, they were sweet and kind to you the second you walked in the first door, escorting you all over. And I loved coming to visit Gilbert. It was one of my favorite student teaching placements just because I loved going out there. It made the drive worth it completely.
I know the drive really isn't that bad. I kind of enjoy it. We've talked about that before, but
yeah, it's not bad. Okay. So you get there, you're filling in for Camille. Did you decide to do things your way? Did you do some things her way since you student taught with her? How has that transition been and how have the students handled this whole new job, big shoes, all the smiles?
So I think that the fact that I student taught there has been really beneficial because I've known about a lot of her traditions that she's had and, you know, even some of the sayings that she has. And so for instance, they celebrate half note day. Is half note day even a thing? I don't think half note day is
for
a
middle
thing.
Schoolers. Sure.
But Camille Jones made it a thing. And I remember, and I hope I didn't realize it was the wrong date and maybe celebrated on the wrong day, but whatever it was. But I remember her always saying that half note day is March 31st. And so anytime that they plowed through a half note, whenever they were singing, she's like, when is half note day? March 31st. And so it's just one of those things. And so on March 31st, we celebrated half note day with donuts and pretzel sticks to, you know, to make cute little half notes. And
oh, that's adorable.
So random things like that. I was like, yeah, I'll keep that tradition. And just knowing her expectations in the room, I think has been really helpful. And the fact that some of the students had siblings who were older, who had me as a student teacher. So I'm not like a completely unfamiliar face. Mm-hmm. And she also did a really good job of introducing me. Like I helped with her final concert last year. It was a virtual concert, but I was in it. So I got to say hello to everybody. And
what
so
a
I think,
beautiful transition. Like it was an intentional, but you weren't just like plop here. It was a threading in.
Yeah. And so I think that was really helped. And I think honestly, the relationship I had with Daphne, the teacher next door, has also been helpful because we're just already tag teaming things. And I think the fact that me and Camille share a name, you know, it helps with the transition to be replaced with one Camille to another Camille. So
that's awesome. Okay. So what has been your favorite memory so far? Other than half no day, because I mean, donuts and pretzel sticks, you can't really top that.
Yes, of course. Of course. Well, I don't know. I'm pretty goofy and I really like playing into special days, I guess. And so I think already the students have come to expect that if there's a dress up day or some kind of special day at all, that I'm going to go full out. And I don't know if that's just also the nature of this year, that last year kind of stunk, but I'm like, I'm going to just go all out because I really have. And so the dress up days have been really fun and just seeing their reactions to what I come in looking like, I guess. So
I love how this is so student centric, that your passion and your smiles and the things you're loving are the students.
Oh yeah.
They're fun. Tell me about the musical stuff. Are all your musical goals happening because you love the students so much? I feel like there's automatic rapport. Like I can feel the rapport.
It's been kind of a transition in general because I think talking about Miss Jones and stepping into her shoes. Okay. Y'all don't know about her, but she is a pianist. And I know that we might talk about piano later, but she is a pianist and she, looking through her choral library, there's some pretty challenging songs in there that I don't know if I ever would have been like, I'm going to tackle this. And so I think convincing myself to give them harder music throughout the year has been an interesting mental, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, mental. I feel that. Mental battle. I've always tried to pick one like uncomfortable piece a year.
Yeah, and so that's a good goal. I should do that. But it's just the fact that my eighth graders even were like, Miss Lacey, we can do something harder than this. I'm like, you're right. Okay. And so we gave us something else and they just did it. And they're like, this is so fun. I'm like, oh, okay. Have fun. And so
Look at you. You're still talking. This is such a great tidbit. If you were listening to this, I hope you are feeling inspired to go like get to know your students. Hey, Miss Lacey, like this is great, but you know, we can do harder stuff. The fact that you were willing to take that feedback, that's huge.
Absolutely. And I think this whole year I've been taking lots of feedback because some of them are very upfront about saying, this was our expectations from last year. We know how to do this. I'm like, okay. And then they'll remind me, they're like, oh, we had this warm up, this warm up, this warm up. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, you have that warm up. Let me get my iPad and film you singing it because we're going to bring it back. And so like, give me everything that I don't already know about how she taught. and I just want to implement it because I do. I think it's also the fact that I had a lot of respect. I have a lot of respect for Miss Jones, and I know how much time she spent building up that program, but I just want to give it the, what's the word I'm looking for? The,
you want to take it to, you want to keep it going, the momentum, and take it to the next.
I want to keep the momentum going and give it what it deserves. So
I love that you're letting them teach you some of those things. And what I really am excited to see in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, when you have soaked in all of the Miss Jones-ness and you make it the Miss Lacy-ness. Like, I'm interested to see, because I was lucky enough to have a mentor teacher at a school where we had multiple teachers, because I was at a performing arts school for my first 5 years of teaching. And so much of who I am today as a teacher was soaking in from all those other teachers. And then I remember vividly when I was like, okay, well, so-and-so did that activity this way, but I'm going to do it this way. And I felt like such a rebel. But it becomes like you fill your cup and you fill your arsenal. I love that you are doing that. Oh, this is genius. Okay. Has anything been like hard? Oh, go.
Well, I just, you know, it just is such a difference. This is kind of not answering what you just said, but at my last school, so I worked at a charter school. I'm the one with that school, I said, I'll take this job if we can create a middle school choir class. And so I was the one that like started the middle school actually choir classes at my last school. And that was talking about things that are hard. That was hard before because I just had nobody else to pull from except for Miss Jones, who I student taught with. So even there, I've been like thinking about how she's been teaching this whole time. And so actually stepping into her physical classroom and hearing feedback from her eighth graders who have really spent time with her, it's just so enlightening to all of a sudden like have the opportunity to learn from her, even though she's not physically in the building anymore. And so I just feel like I'm already in like a bigger community than I was before. And that's just, it makes your life a little easier and like more motivational, I guess.
Yeah. So you're talking about the power of community, the power of not always being the perfect right one. Like, yes, you're the expert and obviously the students respect you as the expert, but I love that you've opened the door to, hey, let's see where we can take this together. It sounds so collaborative in your classroom. And I bet those middle schoolers love it.
I like to hope that they love it. So,
do you have behavior issues ever?
Oh, do I have behavior issues ever? You know, honestly, okay, I have to say, Gilbert is, it's not bad. Like I have to acknowledge that it's kind of a blessed little community, but yes, we do have some behavior issues. I have had some students that have straight up said, well, you're not as good as Miss Jones. We had some conversations about that, about respectful things coming out of your mouth. I have some special friends who like to go to ISS all the time.
And friends. Yes.
Yeah. Like, I mean, truly, I'm like, I really do adore you as a student, but I adore you way more when you're actually in my class than when you're missing. And so we've gotten to have some fun moments with reflecting why it's more important to be in class than messing around in other classes so you're not in my class. So it's interesting. I feel like a lot of things, if we have a lot of behavior issues, they happen outside the class that then affect inside my class, which I feel lucky because that means that I guess I've created a good enough community so they don't have to act like that in my room. And a lot of times I'll say, hey, that's for somebody else's class. That's not for my class. So
no, yeah, that's but that's a clear expectation. That's a really clear expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not like that in my class. We are positive mental attitude all the way. If you don't have that, then you can chill out until you do.
Love it. You speak like you're talking. I love this. Speak like you're talking in middle school as you're talking my language. Okay, before I give you some rapid fire questions, I did ask all of my pre-service students what questions they had for you. So these are going to be good. But before I ask you some of these questions, what are your goals? So if we loop back in the next 3 to 5 years, what are some of your goals? I'd love to hear them out loud into the universe.
Some of my goals. Well, I would like to actually conquer, you know, harder pieces. And so yes, that's a big goal. I really want to have, create like a worldwide curriculum. Like, I want them to be singing songs, not just from things that they know in their immediate, you know, community. I want them to have like a worldwide view. And so that's kind of what I'm thinking about when I'm planning out my years. But really, I just want to be comfortable with running everything. There's a lot of things. She was into a lot of stuff. I mean, they took tours everywhere. They were, her kids were in, I guess my kids, they're my kids now, but they were in competitions and they were, it was just a lot. And so I think just becoming comfortable with all of that and knowing how to run that smoothly and get to be able to build the program back up, because really our numbers have dropped significantly this year. And so I want to get kids them excited to be back in my classroom as some extra incentives, but also be confident leading all of that. So
that's it's a almost a broad blessing answer. You had this. No, this is good. Harder music, get the momentum and start doing lots of things. Like you even said recruitment in there without saying recruitment. Look there at you go. All the buzzwords. All the buzzwords. Are you ready for some rapid fire?
Yeah, bring them on.
All right. First area of rapid fire, classroom management.
Classroom management.
How have you grown as a disciplinarian?
Ooh, it's been interesting. And so I just remember back from student teaching, this is actually from elementary school. And I remember my coaching teacher saying, you always have to have your sacrificial goat. And so they know, sounds so bad, but it's like, so they know from the beginning that if you're going to say something, you're going to follow through with it and they need to see that. And so, you know, a kid acts up, you're like, you're my sacrificial goat. You're going to know that I mean business and we're going to go from there. But honestly, I think,
do you tell them they're the goat?
No, you never tell them they're the goat.
The goat. I feel like the goat's a good thing. Greatest known, whatever.
I know. Yeah. So that could make them think there's something else out there. They got to earn that one. But no, past that though, I have just been really trying to implement positive mental attitude in my classroom and just know that that is we respect the musicians, we respect the music and we respect the music room. And I feel like whenever you talk about that, you really embody a lot of respect in the classroom. And we have a positive mental attitude about everything. And with middle schoolers, that is a big deal because they don't have a positive mental attitude about everything. And I think it's just understanding it's okay to take time out of class to teach life lessons about how to acknowledge what they're going through in their bodies and with their emotions. And so it's okay to take the 5 minutes to just chill out and breathe or not do music. And I think that them knowing that you know that helps them not want to be as horrible in your class. And so really I haven't had to do a whole lot of consequences because we're not that serious in my class. And so
I love it.
Yeah.
That's so much fun. I kind of want to come be a fly on the wall. I'm like excited. I want to come on a dress up day, maybe sock day. I have some great socks.
Hey, crazy sock day. I had a sock belt. I made a sock tutu.
Of course you did. That is pretty.
Got to show them all off. You only have two feet.
Okay. Next one in the rapid fire of classroom management. Are there any types of things you wish you could go back and tell your first year teacher self? So these are coming from soon to be first year teachers. Is there anything you would want your first year teacher self to know about classroom management?
To remember that students will not remember what you tell them the first time. And it is okay that you take the time to build, not tradition. What's the word? You build
routine.
Yes. Build a routine in the beginning. And that is perfectly fine for you to take the time to do that, because repeating yourself and making sure they really know your expectations and that you're going to follow through with your expectations, that's going to help them know what to expect when they come into your classroom, no matter how they act outside of your classroom. And knowing that it's okay that that takes time, because that's a big deal, especially if you're teaching younger ones. I'm thinking about when my first year, the biggest problems were like my kindergarten class. So they need to know how to walk in the line. They need to know how you want them to sit, where you want them to sit. And honestly, middle school is not that different. They need to know where you want them to sit and how you want them to sit. I mean, we talked about posture all day long. So
all day long. I love your respect, though. Mine was respect yourself, respect others, respect the music. And so when someone would act up, I'd be like, which respect are you fixing right now?
Ooh, I like it.
So yeah. It was always a little bit of sass. Okay, great. We're moving on to the next round of questions.
They love that. Yeah. Okay.
Lesson planning. Are you ready? How has each year of teaching influence the amount of stuff you have to put into a lesson plan? And then this is in translation. Does it ever get easier or take less time?
Okay. Well, if I'm thinking about like student teaching, I know that especially, I'm gonna throw out a name, Dr. Valerio, she wanted us to have every little thing written down for our student teaching. You want to know exactly what you're going to say, when you're going to say it, how long you're going to say it, what I can statements are you covering with that and everything. And, you know, in the moment I'm saying, man, this is so much work. But the thing that's great about that is as you go, you realize you don't have to write down every single little thing as you go. And there's something also about teaching middle school chorus that I can kind of look at as the broader picture. I'm like, I want to cover these two sections this week. And these are the standards that I want to cover. And you kind of have to understand that each class is going to take it at a different pace. Different things are going to happen in each class. And so you can really plan, but it might not go exactly how you think it's going to go. And so in the beginning, it's really great to like overplan. Actually, it's always great to overplan, because then you never have that awkward, what am I doing in my class? And it's good to take the time to plan and know exactly what your expectations for yourself and your students are that day, but also knowing that it might not actually happen that way, and that's okay. And I think it does get easier because you start knowing what you want to actually happen in your class. So
that's a perfect answer. Good. And it leads excellently into the next bullet.
Beautiful.
Tell us about your plan B lesson planning. Do you always have one? Mm-hmm. How important is it? What does it look like? When have you used it?
Like my plan B in case
like
I'm
something
out,
just doesn't go well, or they're not getting something, or there's you haven't had to use one?
I feel like this is really weird, but the thing that just popped in my head is I used to be a camp counselor for a long, long time, like 7-8 years I was a camp counselor. And so I feel like I haven't personally been too much like I need to write down a plan B and blah, 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 because I always, as a camp counselor, you always had filler ideas in your head at all times. And I feel like a lot of times that ends up being my plan B, and just observing your students and knowing what they need, because sometimes your students, no matter how much you're going to teach them that day, they're not getting any of it. They're somewhere else. And, you know, sometimes it's good just to do a group activity, and that might be needed for one class and not for another class. For instance, I had a class the other day, and it's not because they were too attentive that day. We got through everything. And you know what we ended up doing at the end of class is they wanted to meditate. And so they all laid down on the floor, and we closed the blinds and they meditated. The next class definitely did not do that. So
the next class definitely didn't meditate.
Yeah. Well, so I just see that like paying attention to what your students need or want is my plan B. Now it's always good to have like subplans. You should definitely have subplans in place.
Ooh, subplans. That's a good
one. Never know. I feel like that can be a plan B.
Mm-hmm. No, that's perfect. I'm going to change the lesson that I teach about your, you know, secondary lesson plan for the disaster and call it your inner camp counselor. That's a genius idea.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Is. I'm going to change my syllabi when we hang up from this call. Okay. Kind of related to lesson plans, but not really. I'm reading you verbatim what my students wrote, so I hope you feel like you are talking to them. What have you learned about time management and lesson plan pacing, or pacing in general? So time management and pacing. I feel like they're just using buzzwords sometimes.
I like it, though. You know, it's really weird. I've gotten really impressed with myself sometimes with how right on the money I look at the clock, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're done and it's time to go. Beautiful. Okay, let's go. But I will tell you, If you ever had to do the lesson plans where you had to do out the time of every single thing that you're doing, and in the beginning, if that's where you are, that is where it's really helpful. If you know that it will take 13 minutes to teach an activity or a song or a section, then you know how to plan out the next part of your class too. You're like, okay, that's 13 minutes. Okay, the next thing will take 10 minutes. It'll take 2 minutes to transition. And then how much time? Always account for how much time it takes to put things away, because that's a big deal, especially if you end up being with little ones. Okay, it takes a long time to put away instruments, no matter how good your routine is. It's just going to take time. And so, but I think like the more you do it, the more you catch on. And I feel like I've always been pretty good at that. And so I feel like that's a strength.
Channeling your inner camp counselor there.
Whoop, yes. Whoop. Always looking at a clock. I've had people like, why do you have so many clocks in your house? I'm like, I have to know what time it is. Cause then, you know,
I can't be late.
I can't be late.
Pretty sure I put my watch on the second I wake up, cause I'm afraid I'm going to be late to something.
Yes.
Okay. We finished two rounds. There's three more quick ones.
Okay.
Piano skills. I knew you were going to love this one. I just knew it. How did your, this is so good. How did your piano requirements and piano classes in college prepare you for the classroom?
Let me tell you about how good I was in piano skills. I have not received very many C's in my life, but I got a C in the, and this is at USC. This is grad school where I am supposed to already be good. I have taken piano lessons in the past. Okay. I should be better than I am, but it's a work in progress. And so
look at that positive. That was positive. It's a work in progress.
And so what I will say that has really helped me is whenever they talked about playing open scores and being able to sing one part while you're playing another part, that is very helpful because your kiddos need that. And if you know that you can't play two different parts at the same time while also listening, then that is a good thing for you to use. Now, me personally, obviously it sounds like I'm really good at piano, but I'm better at vocal modeling their part. And so I have really just done a lot of singing with them and then making them do it by themselves, because I know that I can't hear them if I'm singing. And half the time I can't hear them if I'm playing because they're so quiet. And so I think that's really good for ear training anyways, is making them do it on their own. And so that's how I've kind of gone around with that. And I've used a lot of either putting their parts onto a program or having somebody record a part for them so they can actually hear it with the accompaniment. Mm-hmm. But that's been like a little battle inside me that I have a goal to become really good at piano. But whenever they come from a teacher who's really good at piano and you're just not, you have to be creative.
Yes.
Because they have to learn their stuff somehow. So know that if you're not great at piano, there's hope for you. But know that knowing piano and taking your classes seriously will really benefit you. And it's not wasted time or effort. So
I love it. And I love we actually do one of the first couple weeks of secondary methods. They have an assignment where they play a different part and sing another part.
And that really is helpful. And also the warm-ups. Those classes really helped me feel confident with leading warm-ups on the piano too. So they are beneficial. Take them serious. Take that class seriously.
So you answered the next question is, what advice would you give to those people who had opportunities to take more piano classes or training? Like, are you going to take piano lessons this summer? What's your plan to get better?
I'm not going to lie. I actually have looked into taking piano lessons, and there's also a challenge out there, and that's apparently the 100-day practice challenge of practicing your instrument every single day. And I was really about it. And then I kind of dropped the ball. And so now I have summer that I can do that with again.
I'm accountable. I play.
Yeah. And I always just think of Dr. Walker too. And she's really great at piano too. And she always said, if you need to be practicing every day, all day during summer to get your music prepared and learned, then do it. Mm-hmm. And so
I practice my piano all the time. I have to.
Otherwise I get really distracted. You have to practice it because they do need it. And so know that it has been a struggle. You asked earlier, what has been something hard? Not knowing piano very well has been a struggle.
Not being a professional pianist? I mean, come on.
I know. Just
All right, last two rounds. Conducting. There's only one question in this one. What conducting skills have been necessary in your teaching experience so far? Did you actually use anything you had to learn in conducting?
Honestly, I loved conducting. And I think the big things that I've learned is you yourself need to know what tempo you want the piece to be. And that's the big thing. They need to see that you know what the tempo is. I show a lot of vowel shapes. I don't know if that's really used in adults a lot, but we use a lot of, vowel shapes. But I really appreciated how it was always talked about whatever you're modeling is what your students will do. And so I realize I'm looking at them and they're all slouching and then I'm like, ooh, I'm slouching. And so I think that that's a big deal, is they're going to model what you're doing. They won't always understand what your hands are doing, though. So you have to teach them the most important things.
That's perfectly said. So good. So good. And I love that you're still, even now, reflecting back on how, oh, they're slouching, let me fix it, versus you're slouching. Like, that's such a positive way to go about it. I love that mentality. Okay, last thing.
Okay.
Tips and tricks. What's been your favorite go-to activity? Like, if you have to regain their attention or make a quick pivot, or the coolest thing you do in your classroom that the students are always asking, like, if there was one thing you could share, one activity, what would it be?
Oh my goodness, just one? I feel like it's different. Hard one. It's different for every classes. Like, I do a lot of repeat after me with rhythms, like on my hands, like the four after me. So I'll do four beats and then they'll do four beats after me. I stole your beatboxing.
Yeah. The beatbox square.
I don't know how to describe that over a podcast. We have little sayings that this is not just one. I can't just say one.
It's okay. These are great.
I don't know, but we do a lot of, speaking in funny voices. And so I'll say something to them and they'll say it back to me. So that normally gains their attention. We've been playing the Forbidden Pattern.
Yes.
Which is from S Cubed. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that has been a huge hit. And right now this year, for some reason, I've only been putting the score up there for sixth grade, but seventh and eighth graders are paying attention to that score. And then they always like to tell me when I'm winning and when I'm losing. But they always want to play it because they're scoring. Their score's not up there. I should probably include everybody, but they actually do ask for that. So if I don't do it one day, they ask for another day, and they all know what my positions are too. So if they're talking or something, like, is that included in position one? And then they'll fix it. And so standing silent and ready to sing. So
I love too that just as you're talking about them, you're glowing. Like, you can just tell that you are in the place you're supposed to be in. Thank you for sharing all these little insights. This is like my own little podcast case study. So this is your first official year in the big shoes of Miss Jones. And so we'll loop back and see what's going on in, like, 3 to 5 years and all that jazz.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, before we go, what is something that you want the listener to walk away with from this episode? What is the one thing that really matters, the Music Ed Matters podcast? What's one thing that matters to you right now?
I think the most important thing that I've held on to is the idea of me serving my students as their teacher, but also teaching my students how their music serves each other and how their music serves me. I tell them all the time when they fill my cup, I'm like, what you just did just filled my cup. And hopefully I'm filling their cup too. And so by relating music to service and what we do for one another through that, I think just really helps us remember our big purpose and that what we do matters, no matter who you're teaching it to and no matter how bad you think your day was, somebody walked away with a good experience and that was important. So
I'm so glad that we got to have this. I feel like you've made my day so much better. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Y'all, you really fill my cup. I love how she said that. We have the opportunity to serve our students. Our students get to serve each other in how they experience and create music together. And then we, as a choir collective, get to serve our schools, our communities, people. I love that service element. I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation, the first of, I hope, many teacher stories. If you know a teacher that needs to be featured on one of the new upcoming teacher stories, I'd love to hear. You can reach me at emilybirch.org/contact, or you can jump over to patreon.com/musicedmatters and join the conversation and request episodes and be a part of our monthly meetups, or join us for our summer PD weekend, which is coming soon. All the details are over on that Patreon page. But really, what you're doing, my friends, as we just heard in this awesome story, it really matters. We all know that music matters. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on the Music Ed.